Hey everyone, welcome to episode 48 of the Historic Performance Podcast featuring Matt Howley, Director of Sports Science at the University of Notre Dame. Before getting to today's podcast, I actually want to mention a great continuing education opportunity in the form of an online summit being hosted by Chris Ritter and Zach Long between May 9th and the 16th. It's called the Global Performance Summit, and they've done a great job in creating a great lineup of featured speakers, including guys like Charlie Weingroff, Nick Winkelman, Dr. Mario Novo, Dr. Mike Young, and a host of others. I really suggest that you check it out. I think it's going to interest many of you. The website is www.globalperformancesummit.com. I'll also be linking it in the show notes. In today's episode, as I mentioned, I'm being joined by Matt Howley. He was gracious enough to accept an invitation after being recommended by several previous guests of the podcast. In today's episode, he talks about some of the challenges that he faced while expanding the sports science department at the University of Notre Dame, how his role as the director of sports science has evolved over the years, and his role with women's soccer and how they have gone about integrating wearable technology to improve their recovery during a very strenuous and compact NCAA women's soccer season. Hope you guys enjoy it. Let's get started. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Historic Performance Podcast. I'm really happy to be joined by Matt Howley over at the University of Notre Dame. He's their Director of Sports Science. Matt, how are you?
Yeah, good. Thanks, James. Good to be on.
Yeah, it's a pleasure having you on, Matt. Matt, just to start us off, could you tell us a little bit about your background, your career journey, and how you ended up at the University of Notre Dame?
So my background, obviously I'm from Australia, so did all my schooling over there, played Australian football, basketball, cricket, like everyone does, plays a variety of sports, and then always had a passion, or had a big passion for sport. Over time, injuries, younger, just got the best of me. And like as I was going through school, it was like, oh, well, I really want to be involved in sport, but how was the big question. And people were saying, oh, maybe phys ed teacher, maybe there's some other options. I looked at physical therapy or physiotherapy, depending where you are around the world. And then as I got closer to finishing up school, sports science and strength and conditioning became something I was more aware of, and then like decided to pursue a career in that area, and it's obviously going okay at the moment. So at university, I went to Deakin University, completed undergrad there, and during that time was fortunate enough to work at the Eastern Rangers in the TSC Cup, which is the development competition for the AFL, essentially, for the state of Victoria. From there, went down and just volunteered to start with. So a university lecturer provided an opening or a post and was like, I need some help down here. Just doing the basic kind of things. It might be a little bit of weight room coaching, filling drink bottles, maybe helping run conditioning sessions, just all the basic things you do when you're an intern, collecting data. So I went down there, helped out, was fortunate enough to stay on. Then moved into more of just an S&C role. So it was more of a weight room kind of role. Like working out all those things with the guys. At that point, also was fortunate enough to spend a period of time or an off season, about 12 weeks with the Melbourne Storm under 20s team. So still working with that junior level kind of athlete, but obviously at the next level up from under 18s, different sports. So obviously some unique differences, strength, power, a lot more of a focus in their program. So saw some really cool things in the short time I was down there. With Rob Jackson, and then I was fortunate enough to be promoted to what they were terming like a high performance major, overseeing the program at the Eastern Rangers at that point. And that was when I finished undergrad and wasn't sure what I wanted to do, but after consulting with some people, I was decided that I thought like master's was the better option. I didn't want to go into more of a research background and do an honors and a PhD at that point in time. So pursued a master's and completed the master's in strength and conditioning at Edith Cowan University in Perth. So the online degree that I know some of the former guests you've had on have completed as well. And then during that time, while working at the Eastern Rangers, just was looking around in Australia and realized there wasn't a whole lot available. Like, obviously, smaller country, there's not a lot of full-time, great-paying jobs that you can walk into. We all know how much work you've got to do. So thought, okay, may as well look overseas and just get a broader experience base, essentially, and develop my skill set as much as I could. So looked around. England and Europe was an option, and then looked at the US. Obviously, the collegiate system has a big strength and conditioning background to it, and then just started looking for internships and sent in some applications as things go, and was fortunate enough to get a call back from the guys at Notre Dame, and at that point had an interview and then was offered a role here in January 2011 to be an intern in the strength and conditioning department with the Olympic sports, so 25 Olympic sports teams. Sort of packed up my bags and moved over for 3 months and completed that, and had a great time, learned some different things, like obviously being in a true strength and conditioning program and having worked in a development system at home where the facilities aren't the greatest, to be honest. Like, we had like one Smith machine and a few dumbbells, and so you're just sort of making do with the basics, a couple of med balls, and trying to get some development out of the guys. So, like, just as much as you can, movement and technique based stuff rather than like gross strength training. Then to come over here and work with some athletes and be actually able to see and get some ideas around like true strength training and these kind of things was great. And I learned a lot. And then upon leaving, was fortunate enough to interview for a role and didn't get the first one, but a couple weeks later, I got a call once I'd moved back home offering me a position here as an assistant strength and conditioning coach. And then during the meantime, while I was at home in transition between the two roles for about 8 months, just due to visa and these kind of things, was fortunate enough to spend 8 months at Hawthorn in the AFL as an intern. So I was spending 1 to 2 days there a week just helping out and observing and just doing what I could. And great group of guys and a wealth of experience with Andrew Russell and Peter Burge and the crew down there that were there when I was there. So learned a fantastic amount from them and just the way they run a program. And obviously one of the premier professional teams in Australian sport, and have been holding that mantle for a while now. Just like the structure of the organization, everything they do, first class, and learn a lot from those guys and just their communication, the way they work with medical, all those things are so important. And then moved back over, and then when I came over as assistant strength and conditioning coach, like was assigned soccer, rowing, and both men and women's golf teams. So it was it was different, some sports I'd never worked with before, being rowing and golf. Soccer, I hadn't done a lot of work with, but it's a running-based team sport, so similar to AFL, just minus the contact. So it was a bit easier to get embedded with those guys. And then as things progressed, just kept working away and developing my skill set and my knowledge base. And then over time, like had people bringing ideas to me that realized I was here being Australian, like Catapult and these other companies, and was sharing these things with our director of Olympic strength and conditioning. And then was fortunate enough as things progressed and we started implementing some things over a 3-year period, was promoted to director of sports science in November of 2014, and now I've been in that role for about 18 months.
Could you tell us a little bit about your role as the director of sports science? What are some of your responsibilities within that role?
Yeah, so essentially it's to oversee the vision and the implementation of sports science practices or modalities within the athletic department with all our teams. So originally it was a lot broader, and now we've started narrowing it down as the role's developing and infrastructure is coming around it on how to best make the role and how we're going to best benefit and develop our student athletes, our coaches, and obviously our performance staff, and having them better understand the information that we're collecting, because biggest thing for us is we just don't want to collect data and information and not use it. We can't be incubating data. We need to be collecting that data and then using it once we understand it to make actionable decisions. So it's not necessarily we collect data on day one or we make a change on day two. For us, it's about collecting data over a period of time with whatever, in whatever way that is, and then being able to like actionably like have a coach understand it or explain it to them in very basic terms, or to someone that needs to understand it, whether that be a student athlete as well, then enable the change to happen. So if someone does have a high training load or these kind of things, well, can we modify their training so to put them at a lower risk of injury if they've had a sustained high load of training and these kind of things, and or how we're going to reintegrate someone back into play from a training load standpoint. So there's some of the things that cover, and then obviously you got the things like recovery and all these other that we're trying to focus on streamlining and developing staff's understanding of these practices and what you should be doing at certain times. So you're going to have a different recovery method for the day of a game or the day after a game relative to maybe the day before a game. So what is the science saying that we should be doing in certain times of the week, and what works best for our student athletes? So obviously still giving them an option around those things, and being fortunate enough to have Duncan French join us on staff in the last 3 months, and obviously his experiences for a long period of time, and his background is he's further helping develop everyone's skill set, but also helping us think about things in a little bit different way. And he's been a great addition and someone that I'm working closely with now.
I know as part of your role, you're also taking care of men's soccer, both from an S&C standpoint and a sports science standpoint. I think you mentioned that around 3 years ago, you slowly started to implement a little bit more of the sports science aspect. So what has been the evolution with men's soccer throughout those 3 years?
Yeah, so with men's soccer, it started when I moved over. It was essentially a strength and conditioning role, but with them, it started off just purely a weight room role. Their coach controlled all the conditioning and these kind of things and had done for years. So with them, it just started off purely in the weight room and pretty strict parameters on what we could and couldn't do or what he wanted to achieve. And essentially it was about getting strong. So we developed that with the guys as best we could, and knowing that we were only getting 2 to 3 sessions a week, but worked real hard with them to develop strength and got some really good results out of the guys over a period of the first off season that I was working with them. And then as things developed, like just asking questions like, why are we doing this conditioning program? Have we thought about this? Like, and it's not the easiest thing to go in and challenge a head coach, if you want to say it like that, or question some of the things they're doing. But to me, it's about solving a problem. Like, we're trying to solve a problem from the standpoint of, okay, well, we're getting results, but we're not getting the best results possible. And so what can we change? Like, maybe aren't we doing perfectly or really well, and we can really develop that or just tweak it a little bit, and we're going to get much better results. So, like, looking at their conditioning program, it was an older modeled conditioning program, like a lot of long, slow distance and these kind of things, minimal interval kind of work. And now you understand the research with soccer, and it's a very interval-based game, even though it's played over 2 45-minute halves. And so for me, it was like, okay, so we need to adapt our training program to support the way the game's being played a little bit more. So it was about providing him with some background and some information around that. And then even when I first provided it to him, he wasn't all that keen to change. But then it's about just writing a program, going, this is the way I think it would be better service to support the development of our student athletes. And we did that, and was fortunate enough that their assistant coach at the time, Greg Dalby, was very supportive of the program, something a similar model or basis of program that he'd completed in the US U20 team a few years prior. And he was like, hey boss, like, this is what they do in the national level squad. And then all of a sudden he decided, okay, well, let's give it a go. And then the fortunate thing for us was we had great compliance from our student athletes, and they all developed, and that was one piece that supported them going on to have a really successful season, which ultimately culminated in winning a national championship. Like, it's only a small piece of the pie, but you could definitely see, like, I think our goals in the second half of that season, like, I think we gave up 3 or 4 goals in the second half for the whole season, and we scored upwards of like 20 or something like that. So we were very strong in the second half and really able to like just pressure hard and do all the things that he wanted to achieve through his game plan really well. And obviously the conditioning that we put in place obviously helped support what he was trying to achieve from a technical tactical standpoint. So, and then as things have developed, like introducing GPS with them. So how can we actually quantify what we're doing in a practice and make better decisions, understand the demands of each drill that we're putting in place? Like if we're doing really small-sided games, like in a tight box, like yes, we're getting some load out of it, but is it the load that we're after? And do we need to do some bigger games with some more like high speed running in them to get that conditioning facet into practice? So they're the things that we've progressed to now, and we're looking at these things and the way he's planning his practice and understanding like a certain drill is going to give him a certain adaptation. So we can't just be doing small-sided game upon small-sided game. We need to expand the field sometimes so we actually get some running capacity in there, and then somewhat reduce the amount of like overall load we're putting on the body because there's less change of directions when we're doing those things. So just like helping educate our coaches around those things. And it's tough when you're working with an older coach that's upwards of 70. So like being able to get his buy-in and support of what we're doing is taken some time, but now he's understanding of it. Like everyone, once you understand something, you're more inclined to go with it or support it. And now he understands it and he's seen it work over time with him making the decisions. We've had some great success with some of the things we've changed in our program.
As this evolution started to happen, where from the onset, he was a little bit skeptical, but that started to change as he learned you had the support of the assistant coach. How has kind of creating an athlete profile evolved? So you have a lot of freshman recruits, obviously in college soccer, they're going to be of varying skill levels. You may have one that is extremely skilled and talented. He may not necessarily have a great weight room background, and you may have walk-ons who have made the team. So you have a lot of variation. So how do you go about creating that profile and then maybe individualizing or attacking certain points of weaknesses within that profile?
Yeah, so I think it's real difficult with soccer. Like we don't get many of our freshmen on campus over the summer to be actually able to work with them. We usually get like 2 out of 7. I get like 8 weeks to work with those guys in the summer to actually figure out where they're at and actually get them heading in the right direction or correcting some of their deficiencies and moving them along, where you bring them in and within 4 days of the first day of practice, there's a practice game or a training, like a trial game against another team. So you don't have a lot of time to develop them. I'm lucky, or we're lucky with our coach, like he doesn't always put freshmen into the fire and play them from day one. Like he's got a very developmental focus, and like let's bring them along over time. So like most years, we'll only play one or two of our freshmen. We'll actually see minutes on the field. So there's obviously benefits to that in redshirting and these kind of things that people in the States would know about. But like we can then develop them off the field in other ways. So like instead of like when you're trying to just fit lifts in to just keep guys from like basically progressing, but like just maintaining across the season, we're with the freshmen that we have in, like we're actually able to train them across period of time and actually develop them within the season because they're not on the field. So we can really develop them from a soccer standpoint in practice and have them understanding our game plan, our philosophy, and what we're trying to achieve from that side of things. But then we've also able to develop them from a physical standpoint and really focus on some of those deficient areas. So but we have our movement screen that we use and can really focus on some of those things around movement. And then we have obviously our strength training and just focusing on developing them from a basic athlete development standpoint. So just getting them stronger, getting them more explosive across the season and just really progressing them slowly. Like I don't like to like throw them into the fire too quickly. So like very much a rigid progression when it comes to the weight room is my philosophy. So like we're going to start off with a goblet squat and then progress to something maybe like a front squat and then go to like a back squat, like, and just progress them over time. We don't necessarily, we just want to come in and first day we're chucking 60 kilos or 135 on the bar and just expecting them to lift it. It's about teaching them the movement and teaching them like how they're meant to produce force during movements and these kind of things. And I think the biggest thing that you sort of see with some of the soccer athletes is like the buy-in to strength training. That's not really an issue with our guys. They love the weight room. They come in and they train hard in here. So with our freshmen, even if they've never been in here before, it's just a culture when the guys come in. Like, even if it's in season, we still come in and we'll train hard. It may only be like 3 sets of 2 on squat and a couple of reps on bench reps, a couple of reps on pull-ups and some eccentric posterior chain kind of work and get them out because we only have 20 minutes. But the guys come in and they have a work ethic when they're in here. And that's a testament to our seniors and the culture that has been cultivated within our program over time. So our freshmen come in and they really buy into that and like follow the leader kind of thing and like really get some benefit out. Then by the time they get to the second half of their freshman year, you see the body type definitely, and like they've obviously added some weight and these kind of things, so they can do more things on the field. But then the way how that enables them to perform better in our spring season, which is our non-competitive season, and actually show their wares when they're trying to put their name up for a spot as they move into their sophomore year.
Yeah, and I think something to reiterate, especially because it's an international audience, in terms of the NCAA season, the main competitive season is in the fall, and it's pretty congested schedule, as you could probably attest. There's typically 2, maybe sometimes 3 games during a week. So now that you've been able to integrate a little bit more of the sports science aspect, look at the GPS, understand training load, how has that influenced the way that you go about dealing with recovery during those congested schedules during the fall period?
So like, our biggest thing with GPS is like being able to wear it in games. It's very valuable to give our coach an objective number on how hard a game was. So we've always been able to collect RP and these kind of things, but giving them an objective load number on how much we did in a game enables them to understand, okay, how much did we actually do? And okay, that was hard, or why was it hard, or why was it low? And then matching up with the coach's thoughts has been like really valuable for us. Just creates a better understanding. And then obviously the planning and practice the next week, because sometimes you look at it and it doesn't look that hard. And then you're like, okay, we can practice hard this week. But then if you look at the GPS numbers, the GPS will say otherwise. Okay, this was a really hard game, and the players are reporting it's a hard game. So what are we gonna? How are we gonna adjust our next week to ensure that we're prepared to play on the next weekend, or maybe on the next Wednesday in some situations? So the biggest thing for us is like we play in the ACC, which is bar none one of the soccer powerhouse conferences in the country. So every game that we play is very competitive and against very high quality opposition. So we sort of don't get any games off, and we don't play any of the lower level kind of teams. So we're really focusing on every game. We have to be able to get out there and perform well, because if we don't come out and perform anywhere near a high level, we're going to lose games. So, and obviously, the way the NCAA system works, you can't afford to lose games if you want to get a good CD in the tournament and have a chance to play home games throughout the conference, and then obviously the NCAA tournament. So when it comes to recovery, we need to individualize that. I think so many people have just like, and it's always been the way, it's just easy to keep them in one basket. So something we're trying to do with the guys is figure out like their physiology and these kind of things, and what kind of like body type and like muscle type and these things they have, and then apply the right recovery methods with them, educate them on why something would benefit them over something else. But then ultimately, there's a choice factor that has to play into that. I'm a huge believer that with recovery, if the athlete doesn't think it's working, it may not be having the desired effect with them. So definitely giving them an option when it comes to recovery. So like post game, you obviously have to eat your meal post game. We're going to do some form of release work, foam rolling, these kind of things, and then some form of other therapy after that, whether it's compression by way of Normatex or whether it's a hot cold or it's an ice bath, these kind of things. So different athletes, we may steer them in one direction and try and not necessarily force them to do something, but like we think it'd be more beneficial because this and this would happen as a result of this, or is a better chance of happening. Or on the other hand, if like the athlete thinks, hey, I'd prefer to do an ice bath, okay, we'll go ahead and have an ice bath. But then there's certain times that obviously we don't want them getting immune to the response, so we do try and cycle things through at certain times of the season. And then especially in our off-season periods, we'll really diminish the amount of recovery, and we just go back to the basics, and it's just no more than sleep, nutrition, and hydration. Like, so we take the Normatex away, we take the ice baths away, and it's like, okay, let's see how your body develops and copes with the amount of stress we're putting on it. And during that period, like, our training loads are the same as what they are during the regular season. Yes, you have the game demand, which is maybe a little bit more intense than some of the practices we do, but the cumulative training load across a week is very similar. So we want to see how they develop and cope with that stress. Then when we get in the season and we add those cool things back in that they really think helps, hopefully they feel even better than what they maybe should. So that's sort of the approach we take with recovery, and we've had some really good success with that over the past couple of years.
When you talked about the physiology aspect and understanding their body type and kind of muscle fiber type, how do you go about doing that?
It's just very basic. So just looking at, like, okay, are they an aerobic athlete that maybe isn't that quick? So just very aerobic. So how are you going to recover that athlete versus your very neural athlete who maybe, like, very fast and just doesn't recover as well, but he's super quick, not all that great aerobically. Like, you're going to recover that guy, like, he probably just needs to sleep because, like, of the amount of neural demands and these kind of things, where, like, your aerobic guy, like, okay, like, you probably can get him out the next day after a game and do some light stuff with him or some light exercise with him, because his body's going to tolerate that demand and the load that's put on it extremely well, or much better than your really neural guy who walks in and just is lethargic because he's just, like, fried still from the day before. So just trying to classify guys in those kinds of ways and then implement different recovery strategies based on what they need from that standpoint is how we're looking to do it.
One thing that I like that you brought up is some places just have this one type fits all mentality. When it comes to conditioning, do you also bucket players based on if they're aerobic versus more of the speed power guy, a neuro individual?
Yeah, so there's that facet to it, but then obviously the positional facet to it as well. So I look at their physiology when we're conditioning and what they need. So, like, we've got some guys, for example, that notoriously sit at higher level of heart rate, yet their work output is fine, yet their internal response to the load is always higher. So from my perspective, and the way our coaches are thinking about it, okay, like, we probably need a little bit more aerobic work with them to try and teach them how to recover and actually be able to recover that heart rate when they get in between bouts. You have other guys that just able to produce high intensity effort after high intensity effort with no real stress internally, yet they're not these high neural guys because they're so aerobically efficient. Their maximum speed might be 30 Ks an hour, for example. And then, like, he can repeat, like, 29 and a half or 29 Ks time upon time, yet it's not having a cumulative fatiguing effect on the athlete. So the way we train him is going to be different to the way we train the really neural guy. But then looking at the positional demands of each athlete as well. And it's like, some athletes are obviously changing direction and these kind of things a lot more in soccer, and there's other guys, like your wide guys, that are going to make longer overarching kind of runs. So, like, the way we condition them is going to be different as well. So we obviously need a little bit more speed and high speed running into those wide guys, where our center of the park kind of guys, and even some of our wide midfielders playing inverted wingers in our system, have a little bit more change of direction than you'd maybe anticipate from that position. Or the other fact that we press very hard, and our two outside guys are key in that, along with our forwards. So acceleration and deceleration, change of direction, or being able to stop and read the cues when you get to that athlete with the ball that you're trying to defend and shut down, is going to cause some of those change of direction kind of things. So our wide guys need a combination of both. Our forwards need a combination of both, where our center mids and center backs are, it's more of a change of directional kind of game with them. And then our wide backs, it's very, very linear relative to some of the other positions. So just understanding those demands, and then how we're going to condition them around those and overload them and teach them to cope with the stress that they're going to face, one within a practice session and then within a game. But then from a conditioning standpoint, it's like, okay, so, like, we just can't do tight stuff with our outside backs, because over time, their load, when it comes from a change of direction load, might be five times more in a small-sided game relative to a center mid who at maybe two times more. So he's going to cope with that demand better than a Y guy. And these are things that we need to do a better job on as we're moving forward to educate our coaches around that. So then it's very hard to really specify things, but that's where I get back to what I mentioned earlier about small-sided games. You can't do too much of them because the demands for each position don't necessarily fit within a 3v3 or a 5v5 with an extra man and these kind of things. So it's just understanding those things and figuring that out.
With some of your more advanced athletes, so, and I mean advanced in terms of training age, they may be their juniors and seniors, and they're starting. In terms of the strength training, is it athlete-centric or is it position-centric? Do you take their position to account when they're in the weight room?
A little bit. So like our center backs and like if we've got a big striker, like obviously knowing that he in some terms needs to post up like in basketball and compete in the air, there needs to be a strong body-to-body component, more so than an outside mid or an outside back that's just going to run around and there's less physical contact. So from that perspective, yes, that's taken into account. But then in general, it's as much about developing them generally as an athlete to play soccer in a running-based team sport where we know how much distance they're covering. But there is a position basis to it. But then it is very athlete-centered. Like my guys have the ability in season, we let them choose, in some respect, choose their weights that they're going to lift for that day. There is parameters around that and educated guidelines around that. But in some respect, they control how they're going to lift. Like they come in one week and like, yeah, I'm just cooked after yesterday's game. Well, let's just like dial the load back a bit this week. Let's make sure we get the movement in, do it really well, technically and fundamentally sound. But then there's other times where he'll come in and like, it's like, hey, I feel fantastic today. And like, I have them work up. Like our goalies, like, and like notoriously every week in season will squat really heavy or like relatively really heavy, like because they can sustain that load. And for them being just an explosive position, like they need that strength maintenance or strength development even in season to get better and these kind of things. Where some of our guys that are the real neural guys, it's sometimes hard to train them in season from a strength standpoint because they come in and they're always struggling and fried after a training session. So, or after a game. So how are we going to then strength train them, but then ensure that they get that recovery in because we lift the day after a game on the weekend and then have them prepared for that next game or that next week. So it's just figuring out different things with some guys. But over time, I really find our guys develop within our system and learn to tolerate it. And then by the time they become juniors and seniors and have spent 2 or 3 years in the program, they're really able to come in and, like as I say, like we get after it pretty good in season and still try and push some heavy weight, even though it is only for minimal repetition.
This might be a little bit of a difficult question to ask, but I think it might be beneficial to some of the guys that are listening to the podcast that work in college. So let's say you have two fixtures, one on a Friday, maybe one on Friday game and a Tuesday game. How would that influence kind of your weekly microcycle and how you go about scheduling practices along with the coaching staff?
Yeah, so we face that scenario a lot. So majority of our season is played on a Friday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, Saturday schedule. So I think this last season we only had 3 1-week or one game a week week. So like we had like a 7 day or 6 day break between games. And then this upcoming season, I think we've only got 3 as well. So playing 2 games a week on that kind of fixture is pretty common for us. Or you end up going through stretches where it's like 7 games in like 19, 20 days kind of thing. So you're essentially faced with a schedule that's like they face when they're in the Premier League and they're in the Champions League at the same time. And you're playing 2 games a week. And as I say, for us, like we don't have the depth maybe in our squad to be able to like play a second team in some respects in some games. Like, so our starters are out there every game and some of them will play every minute of 7 games in 20 days. So it's how we're managing them around that. And as I say, big recovery emphasis a day after a game. We obviously have our mandatory off day we need to fit in, which then that's the first thing that's essentially structured to our week because we know we have to have that by NCAA rules. And then from there, it's like, okay, well, how much notoriously on average are our game loads look at our opponents and know their style of play and how that might influence what we're going to do in a game or what's required from us to defend them and these kind of things. Like our offensive system will pretty much stay the same. Like we rarely change our system. Like we play our system and we're good at playing our system and we'll adapt it within what the other team's doing. But then defensively, like if they're a big transition team, well, we play a lot in transition. It's probably going to incur a lot of high speed running and these kind of things. Where if you play a team that's a bit more physical, plays, if you want to say for some sense of word, like a half court kind of game, like in basketball, and really gets it down and tries to break you down, there may be more change of direction and these kind of things in those games, so a different accumulation of load. Just understanding how that may then impact our load across the week. And then we know what we're trying to achieve from a periodization standpoint, like what a load number is. So well, it may be a week where we're trying to use, like, say, 3,000 player load units or 3,200, maybe a 2,800 week if it's more of a deload kind of week. But we will factor those things in. But the big unknown for us is that every game can go for 110 minutes rather than 90. Every game can go to overtime in NCAA soccer. So that's a caveat that you've always got to be prepared for. And last year we had a period of games where we played six overtime games in a row. So we played, it was only one of them that we were able to finish early. All the others went for 110 minutes. And the one that we finished early, I think it went 97. So in a period, we played six games in 17 days, all went to overtime. So it ended up being actually seven games in 18 days when you look at the minutes. So how we're training around that, it's very hard because all of a sudden our loads are at 115, 120% of where we would have projected them to be off a 90-minute game. And then the training you do around that is very minimal. Like it's just getting them up for the next game. But then the biggest thing for us in those periods of time is how we're taking care of those guys that are 11 through 17, 18, that if you do get an injury or two, they need to be able to step in and play 90. So that's ultra important. And again, with NCAA rules that you can't run guys after a game and do extra conditioning and all these kind of things makes it difficult. So the day after a game, like with the guys that don't play, we'll have or play less than, say, 40 or 35 minutes, like we'll have a full-scale scrimmage and those guys will play because we need to get some game load into them in some facet during the season to ensure that if they're required to come in due to an injury or someone's not playing well, they need to be able to step in and at least from a physical standpoint be able to tolerate the load or the demand that's going to be required and placed on their body. So there's some of the things that we face and just how we manage them.
Prior to the podcast, we were just chatting a little bit and you had mentioned that you like the idea behind fatigue science. And for those that don't know about fatigue science, it kind of monitors sleep patterns, and it's a good way in order to at least have a conversation with the athlete in terms of sleep quality and things that can influence it. But how do you go about educating your players about the importance of sleep, especially since it's a huge recovery tool, and especially during the season where there's also going to be travel involved at times, and these are college students who obviously want to have a social life and everything that goes along with that. So how do you have that conversation?
It's very multifactorial here. Like we're pushing it from a lot of directions. So they probably get sick of hearing it sometimes, like our coaches, like educating them and having them support the notion of sleep. Our nutritionists do a great job, our strength coaches as well as our athlete trainers. So everyone's emphasizing the importance of sleep. They're hearing, instead of just being one voice and it get redundant, because you hear it for so many people, it's like, well, maybe there is something to this. And trying to convince an 18 to 21, 22-year-old kid sometimes of some of these things is difficult. But like over time, it's just about reinforcing the message and just sitting down with them, showing them things. So like, yeah, as I said, we were fortunate enough to just trial some fatigue science for a little bit and like saw some really interesting things in some of our guys' sleep patterns. But then the guys wanting to see the information, I think the biggest thing that is missed is athletes not seeing their data and seeing their information. You need to share that with them because otherwise they're going to become resistant to complying and giving in some respects. So sharing it with them and educating them on what's happening. And like some guys that like, well, for example, that you may not think sleep well or 5.5 or 6 hours in the collegiate environment, but then you find out why. And when he goes to bed, it's completely uninterrupted. Then you have a kid that may sleep like 10 hours a night, for example, and it's completely interrupted and these kind of things, or he has a lot of interruptions. He may have like 10 or 12 like interruptions during the night. So he's not getting the amount of deep sleep or consistent deep sleep as he needs. So showing them these things, and then how can we help them make changes? Like, is it a supplementation thing? Like, what foods can you eat from a nutritional standpoint to better help going to sleep, getting better quality sleep, these kind of things? And then maybe there's an underlying sleep issue that we need to speak to our physicians about, and have them take a look at something, maybe refer them along for like a sleep assessment and these kind of things. So that's the way like we would generally think about it. But then with all our data that we collect, we try and to be as transparent as possible. One, with the coaches, so they have an understanding of where the athlete's at. But two, like educating the student athletes, because I think education with them is vital in what we're doing. So they have a better understanding of why we're collecting what we're collecting, and then how that's going to ultimately have an impact on their output and what they're required to do.
When it comes to the data that you're collecting, what type of information do you pass on to the soccer coaches that they feel is important for them to know?
So our coaches want to see the GPS data and the heart rate data. That's the big thing for them. Like, they're all over the heart rate data, but it's just teach them how to understand that. Like, if a guy is up for a day or something, it doesn't mean that he's unfit or something. It just something happened and he didn't tolerate that load maybe as well as we would have anticipated, but it's not necessarily an alarm. But like going through the GPS data with them and showing them different things and ensuring they understand certain components of it. So obviously an issue that we're faced with here is due to weather that we're inside for a majority of our winter and spring season, if you want to say it like that. So you're sort of restricted to using things like player load and IMA from Catapult. So you don't get all the running data that you need. So there's been an emphasis on having them understand these things, and it's not necessarily ideal that some of the running bans that you get, but you've got to play the cards that you're dealt. So it's having them understand these things, and then when we get the running data, you then are able to complement like and look at like what we've seen. So this is what we saw was happening with just player load and IMA and these kind of things, and other variables that we'll look at from inside. But then you overlay the running data over the top, and it starts to paint a clearer picture for the coach and having them understand them. And then we'll ultimately share their wellness data and these things with them as well. So they're understanding. And a big thing for us is like understanding the academic rigors and the academic stress at a university like Notre Dame. So it's having them understand like when tests are. And obviously, like, and you see it a lot, like it's not necessarily the day of or the day before a test. It may be the 2 and 3 days out from a test that stress goes up and mood goes down, because they're just really thinking about these upcoming tests, and they know it's going to take like a lot out of them from that standpoint. And that's when they're doing all the study for the test. So it may be during those periods of time when their wellness questionnaire changes. So and then ultimately their sleep hours might go down as they're staying up later doing more study. So having them understand that these are things that are ultimately impacting the student athlete during training, but obviously during games, and then how we manage that around those situations is obviously vitally important.
Matt, just to go about starting to finalize the podcast, one of the questions that I always ask guests, and I think this is going to be very valuable hearing it from you, because you came to the United States to take an unpaid internship at a university in order to further your education and explore opportunities. What recommendations would you have for young strength and conditioning coaches that are looking to develop their career?
I think the biggest thing is to network well. You need to find and develop a mentor or have a mentor, someone that you can bounce ideas off as you go. And then like volunteer, as you say, like it doesn't come cheap, and volunteering costs you more money than it's ever going to make. But it's those longstanding relationships that you're going to build with people over time within the industry is so important. So understanding, like, you meet someone, then they can introduce you to the next person, they introduce you to the next person, then all of a sudden you may be in line to be able to get a full-time role and these kind of things. So I think the biggest thing is just networking, And understanding the importance of volunteering and getting experience, getting exposure. And not everything you're going to see, you're going to believe is great or you're going to want to implement into your program, but it's about collecting ideas as you go along the journey and then go, okay, that works really well. Well, that one didn't. So then putting things in your bag of tricks in some respect or in your back pocket and then being able to use them, those kind of ideas as you grow along and then you get the opportunity to coach, whether it be in an internship or whether you're fortunate enough to gain a full-time kind of role and then work with a team. So I think it's just the biggest thing for mine is networking. And then when you're in those situations, you've got to ask questions. Something that I've learned to do better over time and still learn, like you've got to ask questions of everyone to gain more insight because there may be something, as I say, that you don't think is a great idea, but then when you ask a question and you learn the rationale and the reasoning behind why something's happening, it makes more sense on why something's happening. So I think everyone you go to, you need to be able to like formulate a question and ask a question and learn from them. So I think you can learn from everyone. So it's about being able to ask them a question or ask them questions to facilitate that learning and understanding.
Matt, if anyone has any questions or comments and they want to reach out to you, what's the best way they can do so?
Best way is probably via Twitter. I'm not as active as I used to be. It's sort of waning off work demands and these kind of things. But Twitter is just at Matt Howley. And then if people want to contact me via email as well, they can do that on or through my work email. It's just mhowley@nd.edu. Just be mindful with work email. There's a lot that comes through, and especially from people external to the university, some of those go to straight to the junk. So if I don't reply to you in a short period of time, just be mindful that it may have kind of my junk email. So I don't necessarily check that every day, but I try and respond as promptly as I can when time permits to emails.
Yeah, I can attest to that. I sent you a couple of emails and they're kind of lost. But yeah, we connected via Twitter, so. Maybe a recommendation would be if they don't hear for you via email, try to connect with you via Twitter.
Yeah, that's probably the best way. Yeah, as you said, like, I forgot about that. When you first reached out, like I didn't get either of them. So, and they didn't even land in my junk email. So I don't know where they are. They're still floating around in the space somewhere. So I guess they'll land at some point.
Yeah, definitely. Matt, it was a pleasure having you on. Thanks so much for coming on to share your information and a little bit about what's going on with men's soccer at Notre Dame.
No problem. Thanks for having me on. Good to have a chat.
Hey, guys. Thanks again for listening to another episode of the Historic Performance Podcast. If you enjoyed it, please make sure to head over to iTunes to leave a review and rating. It helps others discover the show, and I greatly appreciate it. I also want to give a shout-out to everyone that left a question for Dr. Tim Gavitt. I'm recording that episode this Thursday, and it will be coming out next week on Wednesday. So I hope you guys enjoy that, and I'll see you guys next week.